What up? It's the Bull 48. I'm Howard Beck, senior NBA writer from Bleacher Report. Very excited about today's guest, who basically needs no introduction, but I'm going to introduce him anyway because it's kind of my thing. I do introductions. He's a sports agent and entrepreneur, according to his Wikipedia page, co-founder of 35 Ventures, a host of The Boardroom, now host of a new podcast, The Boardroom Out of Office. He's also Kevin Durant's business partner, manager, and really, really good friend. Rich Kleiman, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. I was looking to like do the usual backgrounding that I do like before I do a podcast, especially if I haven't said somebody on before. I'm like, let's find some other little nugget here. Your Wikipedia page is, you know, I don't mean this personally, Rich, but it's a little short. Could use some, rounding out. You got to get somebody on that.
Or maybe I haven't done as much as I thought I did. Maybe my Wikipedia page is just the beginning. But yeah, I mean, I was actually just honored that I had one. I thought that was like a really cool thing, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it just happened recently.
So appreciate you coming on. We're taping this on Friday early afternoon. We arranged this a week ago, which at the time I thought, oh, it'd be great to have Rich on. Been wanting to have him on for a while. And Steve Nash had just been announced. We'll have a nice, cool conversation about Nash and KD and talk about The Boardroom and the new podcast a little bit. And then you and KD decided to light up Twitter yesterday by going on JJ Redick's new podcast and talking a lot about free agency again, the Knicks, which sparked a whole new round of Nets versus Knicks fans and who said what and what KD intended all this. And of course, a discussion of he didn't want the pressure of the Knicks. So it's been 24 hours. And you've gotten to see all the reactions and how the Twitter stream and the rest of media churns all this. What has struck you, Rich, about the way your and KD's comments on Redick's podcast have taken on their own life in the last 24 hours?
So in full transparency, I didn't even know what a reaction there was. So you said that right now. I go really deep in social media sometimes, and sometimes I check out. And yesterday, between Naomi Osaka, Serena's match, Rockets Lakers, and the first football game, I was pretty glued in. I can imagine though, because I saw a few things this morning, but you know, you don't know if it's big or not. So assuming that it's as big as you say it is, it's as to be expected. I get it. I think that this may end up being a pretty entertaining theme that won't go away, that honestly, instead of taking too seriously, we can have fun with. And we doesn't mean Kevin and I mean, we like everyone, you know what I mean? Like, obviously Kevin Durant is not scared of a moment. Like, that sounds insane. Obviously Kevin Durant is not scared of pressure. However, I think just people having an opinion or a preference that seems against the norm is always going to be confusing and bothersome. And Kevin has made a bunch of them, decisions that like the masses would hoped he wouldn't have made. So it builds up, and I expected it. That being said, you know, it's not one of those things I think that like Kevin is ever thinking about engaging in, but he's also pretty honest, very honest, and is never going to, like, if he's on a podcast with someone that's a friend of his, and that's usually the criteria. I told you this in the past. That's usually the criteria at this point for what he'll do in the media, because what's the difference really anymore, you know, between like your friend having his own platform or traditional journalists? It's also so, you know, lines are so blurry that for Kevin, he's just decided he's going to do podcasts with friends of his, the people that he knows and has respect for, and that he wants to help. So when those people ask about the Knicks and the Nets, he's going to answer every time, because that's what he does if someone answers the question. I think long term, right, the Knicks are really in good hands right now, and the Nets clearly are in really good hands, and it could be a really cool moment in New York, especially on the heels of what every New Yorker's gone through, to have two teams that can have a rivalry again and be competitive with monster stars and Kevin and Kyrie in town, and the coach and Steve Nash, a monster star. And the Knicks are in the right hands with Wes and Leon, you know, and that is tough for New Yorkers to hear, because that's been like the kind of the calling, you know, for the last X amount of years. Right.
Yeah.
But I believe in it as a fan. I believe in it. So I think that, you know, I'll have to check out how serious it is, though, on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. Well, first of all, kudos to you that you were not immersed in it in the wake of this yesterday, or in general. You are leading a healthier lifestyle than I am. because I spend too much time on it. And listen, it was probably bigger in the Knicks-Nets crossfire, various loyalists on both sides doing that thing. But it was also, look, the New York Post, the New York Daily News, and the blogs are all jumping in on what does it mean that KD said this? Because anytime he refers to that decision, the free agency, and we review that, there's always going to be a bit of a feeding frenzy. And we're all part of that. So I don't mean to put this on like others. Like, we're all part of that. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty, energetic, let's say, for a little while yesterday. But I'm glad you pointed out the thing about not being afraid of the moment or afraid of a situation, because, I mean, look, Kevin doesn't have anything to prove at this point on that count. Regular season MVP, two-time finals MVP, championships. I mean, everything he's done, the idea that he would be afraid of any situation or something being too much pressure or too much scrutiny, the scrutiny he went through in his couple of years in Golden State was intense. And the backlash that he had to endure after going from Oklahoma to the Bay Area. So I just thought that was silly. I also think that, like, I thought about this with Kawhi last year, too, going to the Clippers, right? There's a pressure that goes going to the Lakers because of the legacy that you then have to uphold. And some people would say, well, you shied away from that. But going to the Clippers, a franchise that's never had any success, and trying to be the one to put it on the map, it's pseudo-analogous to what KD and Kyrie are doing with the Nets. So I don't, and by the way, you know this, Rich, as a native New Yorker. In this market, yeah, the Knicks are number one by a long shot. By a long shot. And the coverage that they get is 10-1 over the Nets. But that's not going to be the case once KD and Kyrie are both on the court. The media is going to storm Barclays and set up camp and be there from day one through whenever the KD-Kyrie run ends. There's no question. And the scrutiny will be there because New York has this media contingent. And so I don't think he's evading anything other than some of the other things that have happened with the Knicks, which we don't need to go into. And I'm glad, as a Knicks fan, you're optimistic about it. And I would expect nothing less than an endorsement for Leon and Wes. But I would say that they are years away from being competitive, just based on what they have right now. I mean, it would take a minor miracle to make this a Knicks-Nets rivalry in the present.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely meant more in line with, like, two arrows pointing up at the same time.
Yes.
You know, like, the rivalry is more about Kevin and the fan base now than it is about on the court. And even that banter, honestly, means, like, there's some relevance, you know, and the Knicks always will have that. But yeah, let's change subjects.
Yeah, no problem.
Right?
What's that?
Boring is it getting? Come on.
No, it does. Although, like, you know, each time that this gets re-sparked, I think some new pieces of it come out. And I do want to throw this at you, though, before we leave this subject, because KD at one point said on the podcast with JJ that and with both of you on there, he says this was a media thing. Like, the media created this thing about me being bound for the Knicks, and that was a foregone conclusion. And I would just say, JJ himself said it on the pod. He said that he had heard all season that that's what was happening. And so when it comes to us in the media, when we're reporting on rumors like that, it's because players and coaches and GMs and scouts and executives and everybody were all saying this. And last year I wrote this. I had never seen the NBA grapevine, so universal about an opinion. And it was everybody said, KD's definitely leaving the Warriors and he's going to the Knicks. Why do you think, and then we'll move off of this in a minute, but why do you think, Rich, that there was such a certainty? And I don't mean by the media. We are a reflection of what the league buzz is. And the league buzz was so incredibly strong and universal. To this day, I'm like, it feels to me like there was a direction and maybe he changed it, because I don't know why else so many people across the league were so certain of this one.
I honestly really don't know how to answer that question, because in one hand, it's almost insinuating. I'm not saying you.
Sure.
That opinion, though, is like insinuating that Kevin, or by default then me, may have purposely misled somebody.
Or changed your mind.
I tried to explain. Well, no, because, of course, changed your mind. But that no one seems to think that the decision in their lives when it relates to what team they're going to play for, especially at that level. And I explained it on JJ's podcast. It's like some of the things that we think about as people that are fans, even if we're working in sports, we're fans, right? Like we're fans of the game. As professional players with the amount of financial security they have, there is a business decision of preference. And so much goes into that, that throughout the process, how many conversations do you think are had throughout a year between quote unquote, your insiders or the, what was the word you used?
Just the grapevine. Yeah, the grapevine.
How many conversations and people and connections and this person connected this person. Kevin is top of mind. The Knicks are wide open. I openly talk about the Knicks. Kevin had this insane game at the Garden. The billboard was put up. And that's what a grapevine is, man. Like that's, you're asking like, how did this happen? That's how rumors happen. So say there's one conversation, and then let's really stop. Say there's one conversation, and I'm talking to somebody, or Kevin's talking to somebody, or Randy is talking to somebody, or Tony's talking to somebody, or Kevin's mom is talking to somebody, and every one of them are talking, they're like, yeah, it would be crazy if he was at the Garden, right? That conversation is very normal. Are they going to sit there and say, but I've also really thought about the fact that Brooklyn's available and there's cap space. Like that's a basketball decision. That's in the inside. That's in the inside, right? Where people realize that they had built an organization, that they built an infrastructure, that maybe, you know, Kevin's style play was more whatever it was, right? Outside people are like, only thing that makes sense, Knicks. Yeah. So the conversation just ensues and it happens. And this was a weird thing that happened and people had more fun writing about it, you know, and it's like it wasn't really Kevin's job to diffuse it. He had every right to kind of do it the way he wanted. It's kind of a boring topic at this point, to be honest. But I think, like I said about the, I think it can be turned into like a fun thing. But you know, when someone knows their contract's up at the end of the year, it'd be no different with you at the report. You're going to make your decision totally when the contract has to be signed with the new organization, or your contract's up, right? You would do the same thing. And throughout that year, you're going to go to dinner and say, man, maybe I should go to, maybe I should try overtime. You know, that could be cool. That's different. Or maybe I should go on my own. Well, the only thing that sounded dope in that, let's say, that everyone speculated on was the Knicks. So, you know what I mean? It all sounded really good. So, and if we wanted to have gone out of our way to shut it down, sure, but that would have looked stupid too, right? In the middle of the year. So,
no, for sure. And also, there's no winning in once you start down that road, right? Once you start trying to knock anything down or getting into that, then it's like, oh, he's ruled out this, so maybe it's this. And besides that, then it would be admitting in the midst of a season that you're thinking of other places, which, even if he was, is not proper to say at that time, right? You guys did the right thing by not addressing that about him possibly leaving.
Exactly. And you know what? It's a cool conversation that we all can have now at this time in the world and think like, all right, maybe we can, even someone like you, right? I remember JJ said it on the pod and we referenced Zach Lowe and Doris Burke, but there's more. There's a ton of them and you're one of them that, like, I'm sure you would love if you could strip down your work to starting to write about things that aren't all this other stuff. It's got to get ridiculous for you guys.
Yeah, it's all... You know? I look at it, Rich, as all part of it. I will say, and this is a conversation for another day and you know, a fun conversation, I think, for you and I to have, because you're in media yourself now with 35 Ventures. And you know, having come to the NBA when you did with KD or when you guys connected, that it's changed a lot. And so my NBA reporting career goes back 23 years. It was basically pre-internet and way pre-social media. It was very early days of internet. So what we talk about, what's written about, how our own work is interpreted or spun the next day or 5 minutes later, everything has changed dramatically. So I am part of that ecosystem, right? So I participate in it. And yeah, the speculation and what guys are going to do in free agency, trade rumors, is all part of I think, the fun of this league for media and for fans. Fans love that stuff. If they didn't, it wouldn't get the clicks that then drive the metrics that make people say, oh, we should cover transactions more and rumors more, right?
But no, but so here's what I'll say to that. I agree with you completely. That's been the most fun part of watching sports since I was a kid, right?
Yeah.
Everyone knows that. The transactions, trades, seeing players in new jerseys. I'm saying the, like, visceral reaction to moves, that feels like stale at this point in the world. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if the Greek Freak decided to make a move somewhere in his life at this point, let's just say for whatever reason was best for his family, where he wanted to be, where he felt like living in the off season, for whatever reason he made that decision, it could be heartbreaking for fans in Milwaukee, understandably. But I think the tone of how people react to decisions now should change. Just period, should change.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you know what? I'm glad you said it. And you guys addressed this a little bit on JJ's podcast too. Among the things that have changed, Rich, I think in the last few years for the worse, you know, we talk about the toxicity of Twitter on a political level and on other issues, other areas. But even in sports, I feel like things have increased in a really unhealthy way. Just the negative stuff, the backlash, the character assassination, whatever. Just I feel like, and you know, social media is not necessarily a reflection of society at large. It is a small subset, but it is, you know, it is one insight into how people are reacting. And I do think that the way people have treated Kevin's move from Oklahoma to the Bay Area, not so much now with this move. It seems like there was less. And actually, I'm curious how you interpret that too. But yeah, people need to start seeing these guys as people who have careers and lives and their own priorities, and not as beholden to a fan base or a city.
Well, listen, yesterday, bigger than Kevin Durant on JJ Redick's podcast, was how dangerous that same commentary can be when Skip Bayless says some bullshit about Dak Prescott. Skip Bayless is a clown. You know why? He's a complete clown, because his own like loss of reality and finding this like voice that he has on this platform to just bash people and make things up completely went off the rails. You know how dangerous it is for young people to sit there for 1 second, for Cowboy fans, for people all over America to sit there and say that they turn to this channel to hear that somebody straight up criticized the quarterback of the Cowboys in this position for admitting what he was going through in one of the darkest periods of the world and his own life personally, and say that shit. Then you got a 12-year-old kid sitting there being like, yeah, Dak Prescott's a pussy, man. And it's crazy. That's dangerous. Yeah. That kid may be going through his own shit, and he's not saying anything because this clown is on TV questioning him. And that's how slippery the slope is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how slippery it is, where you can abuse somebody for a free agency decision and then say that they're weak for having a mental health issue. Then all of a sudden, like, you know, you can imagine. So I'm just saying, it's not that deep. I'm a light guy. You know what I mean? I'm a light guy. I'm a chill dude. Kevin is a chill dude. We don't really get up in it. But if you, when we talk about it, you see the passion, because it's like, you see how pointless it is. Yeah. You see how ridiculous. That's what I meant. Cover trades and free agency and all that shit. Cover Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, rivalry, all of it. But like, don't take it off the court. Like, take it off. Don't take it into the home. That's when it's crazy.
Yeah, no, don't let it get personal. And that's the thing, Rich. Like, you know, you're a huge sports fan. I know this about you, and you talk about your own sports fandom all the time. You're you know, diehard New Yorker, right? So there's a passion and you know, just an intensity to fandom that drives the sports, right? Like that's what you know, it's an important part of it. It's where that passion gets channeled into all these like negative impulses with fans, that, and again, that I see often on Twitter, where it's unhealthy, and where, you know, where that intersects with Skip Bayless's nonsense and the need to have a hot take on everything and to push the envelope. Like that may be a whole other podcast topic, an episode, but I agree with you. That was a gross episode, and it's sad to see. So when Kevin made the move from Oklahoma to the Bay Area, I don't think it was as bad as what LeBron got when he first left Miami, when that was unheard of. But still, there was some intense backlash there. His move here to New York, to Brooklyn, I think maybe because people were prepared for it. The one part of the story that was accurate, that the grapevine got right the whole time, was he's leaving. He's leaving the Warriors after the season. Now, some people are still playing the, no, if he hadn't torn his Achilles, maybe he would have stayed, or if he hadn't torn his Achilles, he would have gone to the Knicks. Da, da, da. But the reaction in general felt different. Did you notice that? What do you think has changed maybe in 4 years, or maybe even in just the last 10. Do you think people are finally starting to just come to terms with the idea that these guys have agency over their own lives?
Maybe. I also think that, like, you know, I'm going to answer this as a fan again. I really do like talking sports, you know? So it's like, I'm going to try to separate Kevin Durant, my partner, my business partner, answer this as a fan. I think that what happens is we, like, see these guys year after year after year in these major moments in our lifetime, for better or for worse, whether you're rooting for them, rooting against them. You see these things happen. You see the celebrations. It reminds you of, like, a certain comfort. There's a comfort in seeing players year after year. You start to feel like you know them. And then after a while, like, you're tired of judging. You see they constantly perform. They constantly succeed. And I think at this point, Kevin is just, like, in such a category of success in the NBA that it's really hard to sit there and get in the, like, rhetoric of the tedious shit that you might think he did or didn't do, because you know he's earned the right. Well, I think every player has the right to do whatever the hell they want, to be honest with you, but he's earned the right to kind of, you know, do what's best for him and wait to the end of his contract. So I think people just understand that. And it's like a tired subject. I mean, I would hope it would be a tired subject. And you might be right. LeBron may have gotten more. You're right. I don't remember exactly. I remember, obviously, you know, people's frustration. But, you know, even that, think about it. You know, could you imagine, like, it just, you looked up and, like, a year or two later, everyone in the world loved LeBron, you know, and it just happens. And I think that's just the way we treat our kind of, like, sports heroes.
Yeah. No, it's all a little fickle. It's all of the moment. And and in that moment, everybody feels something very intensely, and they're certain they're right about it. They're certain that LeBron's a bad person for leaving Cleveland for Miami or whatever. And then, yes, he wins a couple championships. A lot of that subsides. Cleveland forgives him and he comes back. It's all a bit fickle. So we're in early September here, and it's been, what, 15 months since the Achilles? Just your quick update, like, what can you say about where KD is right now? I know people really hoped he was going to go to the bubble, and he didn't. I think that's the right move. You know, there was no point in rushing this thing back. Is everybody feeling like this is that extra however many months it'll be, because we don't know when next season will start, that will benefit him that much more? Could he be playing 5-on-5 right now if camp was opening in a normal year a couple weeks from now?
Yeah, I mean, you know what I was just thinking about while you asked me that? I've been, since the coronavirus, I've been on one coast. He's been on another coast for a good part of the time, then other location. I speak to him every day, but I know he's working out and I know he's in the gym, and nobody knows, like, what's best for him better than him. And we're at that level where I'm not in the minutiae with him on that. Like, I ask him how a run was one day, or I'll ask Randy, but, you know, he'll play next year, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And he'll be the same guy.
That's the most fascinating.
That's the question. That's the only answer.
No, that's a good answer.
I really have.
That's a fair answer. But that's the fascinating part too, Rich. Like, I mean, we know the history of guys coming back from Achilles, and granted, a lot of that's medicine has advanced a lot since the days of Dominique and others. He's turning 32 this month. And, you know, that's an age where, like, some of the supreme athletes in this league start to ebb a little bit anyway. Then you throw the Achilles on top of it. And I think it's a fair question to wonder what we'll see when he does come back, and how he and Kyrie will fit together. Steve Nash is a rookie head coach. I mean, like, the Nets are like this just fascinating bundle of questions, because the potential is obviously the highest that there is. The potential is championship. But there's a volatility there, I think, that's kind of built in, or some unknowns that's built in. I think it's going to make them incredibly fascinating.
I feel like there's every team has.
Yeah. Yeah. No, again, fair. Let me ask you this. What do we get wrong? And you may have a list that would last for the next 3 hours, but what do the fans and media get wrong most often? The things that the discussions you hear, whether it's about KD specifically or about players in general, from your vantage point, where you shake your head and you go, I can't believe these idiots still think X, or that things happen this way.
Yeah, I mean, again, I we've exhausted, like, the talking about it as relates to Kevin. That's not even, like, fair to him anymore, because we have no complaints. You know, he's got a blessed life. So let me just talk about what I see with sports media in general.
Absolutely.
Which I think for me, was like, became pretty evident as soon as I got to the league, meaning as soon as I was able to get access to be in a world that like I dreamed of being in. And now I'm in it and around it and feel a sense of like belonging, right? So then I spent a lot of time now around seeing you for years and years in tunnels of games, is that I know that the media for the most part is really like cool with the athletes and the people, you know, like we've had so many conversations, wait, it's a really cool scene after a game, you know, you really think about it. Those Warrior years, like that was, those moments are dope. Like we're all interacting, talking about what happened the next game. But then somehow I do think the storylines like just get so misinterpreted and so like so set in stone that it doesn't really reflect in any way, in my opinion, what the media are really seeing and doing and what's like going on. You know what I mean? So you think that, for instance, because there's a friendship between two players, that player, when he's a free agent, has got to be joining that guy. Or you think that, you know, because somebody has interest in film, that it's obviously that they're going to LA to be able to go chase the film. And then you like get in casual conversations, like when I'm with my father-in-law, or if I'm with family and they'll be like, man, did you hear KD might be going to the Knicks? I'm like, what do you mean, did you hear? I've worked with him. Like, why are you asking me? Like, you really believe everything you read in the paper. And it's fine. That's what entertainment is, right? Like, think about how big the Worldwide Wrestling Federation is. Like, it's all fake, but it's incredible. But I just think that I noticed that when I saw it. I do love when you guys write stories, Mark Spears, Zach, I mean, so many of them. Write stories that are just great reads. Like part, you know, that part of the business I love when it like reports on the mood or, you know, the clear dissension between two people. I get it. I really do understand it. I get the entertainment part of it, but I crave, like, that's why when I'm on The Athletic sometimes and I see these articles that aren't at the top, but if you scroll down, it's like what I used to read, you know, like preseason NFL predictions and the players and the teams and the outlook and the matchups, that kind of sports journalism I really, really love. And I just think sometimes it gets lost in a lot of the other stuff, but it's just a sign of the times. I do think the ship will be righted. I do.
Yeah. I also think that there, depending on what you're looking for, all of it's there, right? If you just want the fundamentals, the hardcore coverage of the NFL or the NBA, the X's and O's stuff, roster moves, whatever. Like, it's all there, but it sometimes feels like it gets drowned out by the intrigue and the other storylines too. But I think, you know, depending on the fan, some fans just want one of those things and not the other. But it's all there. Like, I think there's a more diverse set of story types or coverage categories now than there ever has been because the internet made that possible. And I think most of that evolution is healthy to the extent that you can find any kind of coverage you want. It's unhealthy to the extent that a certain kind of coverage obviously tends to dominate the talk space, whether on TV or on Twitter.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, I do get the feeling that like talking head debate show may be running its course, right? Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to see Stephen A. He's a superstar. You know what I mean? Stephen A. Smith will work on any platform.
Yeah.
But I think that needing to just like debate recklessly an issue, especially when you're watching it on where you watch live sports, you know, at the highest level, it may run its course a bit. I know maybe at least for me, and I know a whole younger generation is not really consuming it as much as they maybe once were. You agree with that, right?
I don't know how to assess that, Rich. I mean, I'd like to think that the younger demographic is still keyed into or wants long-form stories, wants in-depth reporting and storytelling and all of that. But a generation that's growing up on Twitter, on social media, and on the debate shows that are 24/7 now in a way that weren't when you and I were younger as sports fans, I don't know if now they're just all geared that way. And I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think that the debate show format is ebbing on some level, or that just the shout fest part of it would ebb. There's plenty of good, healthy debates that could be had. They don't have to be shout fest.
Yeah. Well, and you know what else? I think also it might just be that there's too many.
Yeah. Yeah. That is also true. And too many hours to fill. Let's just talk about Steve Nash for a minute here, because when I first reached out last Friday, that was one of the intriguing things, because the news had just broken, I think, that day or the day before. Then, and I think everybody had overlooked the fact that Steve and KD had worked together so much in Golden State, and then all the videos started coming back out, and people, oh yeah, that's right, you know, they were really putting a lot of time in together. How would you describe the relationship between Steve and Kevin?
Friends. I mean, again, like, it's hard for me. Listen, I know that they have spent a lot of time together. I know that they spent a lot of time in the gym together. I know that they've played as peers, as coach and player. I know that they have a lot of interests in common. We've all spent time together. I love Steve. He's a friend of mine as well. Their basketball relationship, though, like, I only can watch it from afar. I'm not privy. I wish I was to, like, the depths that they probably get when they talk basketball. And the things that they know, it's a language I probably wouldn't understand anyway. So I can't comment on that. But, like, he's definitely someone that I've known from the very beginning in working with Kevin, that he had a lot of respect for and was a friend of. And then through Kevin, I got to know him, you know. And it's exciting. I think it's really incredible.
It is. And I think, you know, the built-in respect that KD and Kyrie would have for, obviously, a guy who's a two-time MVP is important, and probably more important than him not having come up the assistant coach route or whatever else. You were just saying, and you mentioned this on JJ's podcast, the idea that, like, there's a level of basketball there that even as an intense fan who's immersed yourself in this game on various levels, that there's a level there that you can't understand. Is that, like, do you ever, like, want to, like, try to get into that, where you say, like, all right, you know, let me in on that conversation, KD, because I want to learn this at that level. And do you think you can get there? Like, can those of us who did not play the game, if you spend enough time around them, like, could you absorb enough of that where you think, like, oh, now I get it?
I don't know. You know, it's funny you say that, because I was mad at myself a little bit for saying that on the podcast, because I compared myself to Tommy. And I'm not knocking Tommy, because I love Tommy. I do like to think of myself as, like, a very high IQ basketball fan. But I also, and I'm not, maybe Tommy is, but I'm not sure I could ever imagine the game or understand the game on a level of somebody that, A, plays it at that level, and then B, maybe close second as it relates to coaches and scouts that live it and breathe it in the gym, in the locker room, every single day. I just think there's another level of sophistication, especially when you played it in the NBA.
Yeah. I agree. And no matter how much time I've spent around this league, I know that there's kind of almost like a hard limit to what I can understand about what they do in the midst of a game. And I think guys like Steve, who I think is a genius of the game, like, and KD thinks at that level too, the way they see the game, you and I, no matter how much we studied it, would never be able to see it the way they see it. And a lot of other players, frankly, can't see it the way they see it, because they're at the most elite level.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, obviously, like, it's not like, and then once, yeah, exactly. Because then once you get to that level, it's like, it's not like every player in the league sees it the way LeBron sees it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like, think about the amount of levels even within the NBA of, like, you know. So then I'm around Kevin. It's like I say something, and if he, like, so if I say to him, like, man, I think so-and-so should start this game and guard him, he'd be like, hell no, no. That'd be awful. I'm like, damn. That must have been a horrible idea. Like, you know what I mean? That's just, I clearly think I'm missing that. But I do want to learn. I actually want to learn tennis like that, because I play a lot of tennis. I watch a lot of tennis. I found myself watching the semis last night instead of any football and basketball at one point. But then I was listening to Chris Evert interview Billie Jean King about the woman Jen Brady. I'm talking about tennis right now.
Go for it.
And the woman who's playing Naomi Osaka. And I was like, there's a certain thing that Billie Jean King was saying. I was like, damn, she sounds just like a savant of the game. It's really cool when you see someone that's, like, mastered their craft.
Absolutely. I want to wrap up real quick with just a couple quick thoughts on just the Boardroom, 35 Ventures. So the Boardroom TV show has gone away for now, correct?
No.
I thought it wound down.
That was some like recording. What?
Sorry, we're getting the connection's breaking up. So it's that was, you were saying that was bad reporting somewhere?
It was just irresponsible, in my opinion.
Okay. My bad.
Only because the Boardroom is a brand. It's a platform. It's
right.
A company that I own. It can't go away. We have distribution natively through our own website, through our social properties, through a newsletter, through our website that has original articles that you're more than welcome to contribute for. We have a college university program called the Boardroom University, and we launched a podcast network.
Right.
Broadcast television, our only distribution was through ESPN at one point on the Plus channel. But no one that is a Boardroom fan at the early stage in our business that's getting free content in five other different ways is going to go pay for it on a paid wall on ESPN Plus. It just didn't work. So we stopped doing business with them on the paid wall, but we did a live event at Sloan. We were planning on doing a live event at South By, and we'll do more with them. But we just don't distribute through Plus, but I'm looking for the next broadcast partner right now that will add into the whole ecosystem.
Gotcha. All right. So it was just that one TV element that went away, not the show itself. My bad. Going off of a stale headline that I probably found on Google or something. But you do have the podcast as well. And that just launched more recently. Who's your dream guest?
Well, it's not a dream guest because he is going to come on my show, and he's going to come on hopefully with one other person. And before I tell you, I may have another answer another time, but if I can just go one season doing this, and maybe there's not really an audience for me after that, you know, this to me is a integral part of the overall Boardroom brand, but people don't want my podcast. That's cool. We're also launching Kevin's, and we'll launch others. Is Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy, just because there's very few things in my life that actually make me like sit and go, wow, it is really cool that I can do this. And it's not some of the things that you would think. You know what it is? I spoke to Rod Strickland on the phone this morning. I talk to Mark Jackson once every 2 weeks. When my mom knows that I know Mark Jackson, that to her is mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing. You know what I mean? So I guess just when I'm lucky enough to make that work and the two of them come on, for sure, like, for me, it might sound corny, but I'll drop the mic for myself on that.
No, that's not corny at all. I mean, that's, again, like, that's the beauty of channeling your sports fandom into a sports-related career, right? But it's funny because you started off on the entertainment side and you were working with, like, big-name, you know, rap artists and others. Like, you, it's not like being amidst celebrities of any kind is new to you. You could probably name drop for the next 20 minutes straight if you wanted to, but Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy, that's what's going to get you going.
100%. And you're right. You're 100. Listen, you're right about both things. I could do that. And there's people that can do that longer than me, but I've built up a good resume of it. But that, you're right. That's not what's exciting. It's that kind of stuff, man. I was on the phone with Rod Strickland today. I muted my phone and I looked at my wife. I said, so cool. And she looked at me like, what the fuck? She knows it's cool, but she's like, are you serious, man? And I was like, yeah, I find that shit to be incredible. I love it.
I haven't been a sports fan for a very long time because it's a casualty of doing this as a career. So I don't have sports heroes anymore, really. But if Joe Montana walked in the door tomorrow and said he wanted to be on my podcast because I grew up a massive Niners fan, and that's where my fandom still lives, is like 30, 40 years ago, trapped in some remote part of my brain. I would flip out.
You know what else I want? Oh my God. I'm afraid to ask, because if he says no, I'm going to have to wait so long. But if he came on my podcast, I'm going to have the best time ever is Eli Manning.
Really?
I have the most incredible like vision of a conversation with him, but it's all good, man. I got to wait on that. I'll quicker ask Obama than I would ask Eli right now.
Really? Just because the disappointment, I don't know. Like Obama, you feel like there's only like a 1% chance anyway, if that. But Eli, you feel like you got.
I know Obama won't say yes. So it's like, that's cool. I almost flattered if they respond and say no. But Eli Manning says no, I'll be like, God damn, I thought I made it a little further than I did.
That's phenomenal. Anything else big coming from? I know 35 Ventures has been pretty prolific. I know Basketball County in the Water, which is about Prince George's County, Maryland, where Katie grew up, and the basketball hotbed there. You guys had a kid from Coney Island about Marbury. Cue Ball, the documentary about basketball at San Quentin Prison. You got anything cool in the works? What should we be on the lookout for?
We do. You know, Kevin invested in the Philadelphia Union and the MLS team, and mm-hmm. we're really excited about that. I'm going to the game tomorrow in Chester. You know, we're working on a bunch of other documentaries. Got a scripted series of development with Apple, and our foundation is growing a lot in PG County. We have a building now, dedicated building called the Durant Center. Houses a handful of not-for-profits as well as the College Track program Kevin funded. Really have our hands busy, and that doesn't make any sense. Our hands dirty having we are busy. But yeah, it's good. I'm blessed, man. I'm blessed. Truly.
It's one of the great things about where we are today in sports versus even when I started covering the Lakers in 97. When Shaq was doing movies, when Shaq was making rap albums, it was, what is he doing? He should be in the gym working on his free throws. And what KD is doing, whether it's on the philanthropy side or on the media empire building side, what LeBron does, what Dame Lillard does, there's no backlash anymore. Like, at least we've at least evolved to that point, Rich, that athletes are viewed as being able to do these other things. It's not a detriment to their game. They can do it all, and they can build out something that is meaningful. Not that sports isn't, but that's meaningful beyond the court or the field. And it's really cool. I love the stuff that you guys have been doing. I look forward to seeing what's next.
Thank you, man. Thanks, Howard. That was fun, bro.
That was great. Thanks so much for taking the time, man. Appreciate it.